The Stromark Massacre, a Space Marine Battles audio drama. Part 1, From the Blood, by Andy Smiley. Performed by Sean Barrett, Tim Bentinck, Jane Collingwood, Jonathan Keeble, and Saul Reichling. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. Balthiel Cerf lay dead on the floor, his body chalk white from exsanguination. Arterial fluid had fled from his orifices until his veins were empty. Hoarfrost rimed the chamber walls. Unnaturally frozen air molecules cracked like agitated ice. Balthiel knelt in the center of the lightless cell, oblivious to the surf.
By his blood, am I made?
The librarian trembled as he spoke. It took all of his focus, all of his training to stay conscious. Pain that he thought he could never have endured racked his body. His hands ached from gripping the floor. His fingers dug knuckle deep into the steel. The unknown figure stepped towards Balthiel.
By his blood, am I armored?
Blood trickled from Balthiel's nose, striking the floor with a regular rhythm. He heard each droplet as it fell. They thundered in his mind like the firing of a siege cannon. Weeping, he held the trance. He would see the end this time. He had to. He would know the face of his tormentor. The shadow fire, obscuring the figure, filtered away.
By his blood!
Smoke exuded from his pores and drifted off his skin in a black-gray pall. A black-armored space marine stood before him. Its battle plate resembled his own, but it bore the bloodied saltire of the damned. It laughed.
By his blood shall I triumph.
The space marine removed its helm, exposing its true face. It was a red-skinned beast, a demon. Still laughing, it opened its fanged mouth and roared.
From the blood are monsters born.
The psychic vision faded, throwing Balthiel up and back against the wall. He collapsed to the floor. Before darkness took him, the librarian tapped the last of his strength and called for aid.
Apothecary! Master Zargo, Brother Iron.
The flesh terror clamped his fist to his breastplate, saluting the two angels in carmine.
Chapter Master Gabriel Seth sends his regards.
Balthiel entered the strategium proper, joining Zargo under a grey-blue hololith projection of the Stromark system.
I see Seth at least had the good sense to avoid this conflict.
Balthiel hid the annoyance from his face. He'd fought alongside Zargo and his chapter before. Of all the sons of Sanguinius, they were the most aloof, displaying a contemptuous disregard for the weak. Their arrogance surpassed that of the Blood Angels themselves. Balthiel held Zargo's gaze. The chapter master's haughtiness did far more to mark him as an angel in carmine than the winged chapter symbol on his left pauldron.
My lord is needed elsewhere.
Castellan Zargo grinned, a glimmer of disappointment in his eyes. He would have enjoyed sparring with the Flesh Terror. Zargo turned to Strategium's sole human occupant.
Leave us!
Admiral Vortimer's face crumpled. He was master of the Emperor's Fist, the largest warship in the Empyrean battle group, and this was his war room. Vortimer pulled his shoulders back in an effort to regain some dignity, and glared up at the three giant warriors. Each took up the space of four of his officers, as they stood around the tactical console. The Space Marine's crimson armor purred as they examined the hololith. This was not the first time Vortimer had encountered the warriors of the Adeptus Astartes. On Pluvus VII, he had borne witness to the speed and ferocity of a White Scar's assault. Still, it seemed impossible that even a superhuman could maneuver clad in such heavy battle plate.
As you wish.
Or, and if he was honest, fear held Vortimer's tongue in check. He made the sign of the Aquila, clicked his boots together, and left the Space Marines to their task.
It is as well he's gone. The drumming of his coward heart was growing tiresome.
Even a passive reading of Aryan's mind revealed the malice behind his jest. It would not be long before Zargo's first captain succumbed to the rage boiling in his blood. Of that, Balthiel was certain.
My orders are to secure Stromark Prime.
Balthiel looked to Zargo.
Yes, we will enter the Stromark system together. You will drive for Prime, while we take Secundus.
Zargo manipulated the image. Blue orbs depicted the sister worlds. Each planet had been a bastion of industry, charged with supplying the Emperor's armies with the weapons needed to prosecute its campaigns of reclamation. The petty feuds that had long existed between their rulers had escalated to a system-wide conflict and could no longer be ignored.
Governor Agrafena has fortified her palace well.
Zargo indicated the line of reinforced positions framing the palace.
There's a dense network of anti-air batteries and surface-to-low-orbit missiles. We cannot risk Thunderhawk deployment.
Several threat sigils sprang up across the hololith as Zargo spoke.
Teleporters,
the palace is void-shielded. Drop pod assault is the only option.
Balthiel studied the hololith, executing the mission in his mind. He had led hundreds of such attacks on enemy positions. There were always casualties.
Losses are likely to be significant.
You must find a way, Flesh Terror. The Axion campaign will stall, perhaps even collapse, should the Stromarkians continue to focus their efforts on destroying one another. You must ensure compliance. The Emperor demands it.
Why not send an assassin? Murder the perfidious weaklings in their sleep. We belong on the front, killing orcs.
Aryan drew his hand through the hololith, distorting the image.
Were it only that simple, brother.
Chaplain Apollos stepped from the shadows of the corridor, his black armor seeming to coalesce from the darkness.
Chaplain!
Zargo greeted the Flesh Terror coldly, annoyed by the contempt in his tone. Aryan said nothing. Balthiel suppressed a smile, reading Aryan's desire to kill Apollos, even as the angel in Carmine formed the thought.
Not with a dozen of your brothers.
The librarian pushed his words into Aryan's mind.
There is more to this conflict than the greed of two individuals. The Stromarkians have long been rivals. This war runs in their blood.
Apollos adjusted the hololith. Stromark Prime spun into sharp focus.
We must crush their spirit. We must remind them that the needs of the Imperium are of more importance than their own petty concerns of state.
Apollos tapped the keys on the tactical console. The hololith shuddered. The image resolved to show several clusters of red orbs that blinked over Stromark Prime, indicating primary bombardment targets.
We will drown the Stromarkians' arrogance in a tide of blood!
The hololith continued to change as Apollos spoke. Its cogitators extrapolated landing sites and predicted enemy casualty rates, illustrating the destruction Apollos and his death company would wreak upon Stromark Prime.
We cannot repeat Honor's end.
Seth's words rang in Balthiel's mind. He stared at the chaplain. Apollos' eyes were as dark as his armor. Balthiel remembered his vision, the black-armored demon etched into his memory, and shivered. The Death Company were a terrible force to behold, their unrestrained fury the stuff of nightmares. Tendrils of icy foreboding stabbed at Balthiel. They were about to unleash terror upon Stromark. Such a massacre would not be without cost. Balthiel reached out tentatively with his mind, probing the chaplain's thoughts. He saw nothing. Apollos' intentions were hidden behind mental barriers as fierce as the skull helm he wore in battle. The librarian turned back to the slowly turning image of Stromark Prime, his eyes lingering on the civilian casualty numbers as they continued to count upwards.
The blood grant me strength.
Death's Cowl bled into real space, exiting the warp in a shimmer of fractured light. The vessel's hull stretched to infinity, defying all laws of artifice, before snapping to its original proportions. Tendrils of ethereal fire clung to the Cowl's ashen flanks as it powered towards Stromark Prime, a final echo of the nightmare realm that the Flesh-Terror strike cruiser had traversed.
Range!
Chaplain Sophias's voice boomed across the Cowl's command bridge like the rumble of thrusters. Even by Space Marine standards, he was ancient, his oil-black armor scrubbed clean of insignia by the ravages of time.
7 minutes to optimal firing distance,
Leech. 9 minutes to deployment range, Leech.
The serfs spoke near simultaneously, a practice Sophias insisted upon. On the battlefield, he had commanded hundreds of warriors, interpreting an unceasing barrage of sensory information while he fought blade to blade with his enemy. He would have his warship function at maximum efficiency. There was no place in battle for civility.
Chaplain Apollos, you have less than 9 minutes. Be ready.
A moment after the voxed status update, an acknowledgement sigil flashed on Zophias' retinal display. Zophias stared across the monastic expanse of the bridge. Below him, dozens of serfs scurried around, performing the myriad tasks necessary for the strike cruiser to function. He pitied them. They existed as echoes of the warriors they delivered to battle. The serfs' ashen robes were a poor substitute for the dark armor worn by the Death Company, ensconced in the lower decks. The saw-toothed blades wrought into the floor of the bridge, no more than homage to the chapter symbol all flesh terrors carried on their pauldrons. Zophias looked up and growled, glaring through the real space window as Stromark Prime edged closer. He would give his primary heart to be making planetfall with Apollos and his battle brothers. It was true that he commanded the power to obliterate planets, to cut a bloody path through the stars. But naval engagements were detached, passionless things that left him as cold as the void they were fought in. Zophias yearned for the immediacy of personal combat, to once again hear the bark of a bolt gun, to feel it judder in his hand as it spat death. He wished for nothing more than to taste the sharp tang of supercharged air as his croziers struck down an enemy. He sighed. Such things would never again be his to experience. A monstrous, red-skinned demon clad in fire and bronze had mortally wounded Zophias in the Lepharian campaign. Khorne's mightiest child, its axe a burning totem of murder, the demon had shattered Zophias' bones and bisected him with a single stroke of its blade. Only his tenacity and burning anger had kept his twin hearts pumping until the apothecaries found him. They had interred him in the Cowl's command throne, keeping his body alive through a regimen of electroshocks and biofluids. Zophias was to be transferred to a dreadnought sarcophagus on his return to Cretacea, given an armored body in which to continue his battle against the enemies of his chapter. But operational requirements had necessitated he remain on the Cowl. Now, after more than 6 decades, he could no longer be removed from the vessel. Zophias looked down at the bundle of wires and cabling that replaced his legs. This was to be his fate until oblivion claimed him. The chamber's luminators flickered as the ship sensed its captain's frustration.
Enemy contacts, Leech! Closing!
Show me!
Zophias studied the tactical hololith as it materialized in the air above him. A pair of warships and a shoal of support frigates were moving to intercept them. He cast his eye over each of the warships in turn, bringing them to the forefront of the image. The Cowl's machine spirit analyzed their engine signatures, displaying a raft of tactical data, including the offensive and defensive capability of each vessel. The Pride of Halka was a Luna-class cruiser, the Emperor's Guardian a Dictator-class, whose energy output suggested it was carrying a full complement of Starhawk bombers. 3 Cobra-class destroyers were trying their best to hide among the modest flotilla. To the front of the chamber, a communication serf spun round from his console to address Sophias.
My liege, they've sent requests to negotiate over the comnet. Vox silence! Hold course! Liege?
The comm serf had spoken without thinking. He felt his throat go dry as too late he realized his error.
We are not here to settle a dispute. We are not arbitrators. We are the chosen of Sanguinius, the angels of death, and we have come to deliver judgment.
Sweat glistened on the comm serf's brow.
Yes, liege. Forgive me.
Sophias could have killed the serf for his insolence. He knew of several of his brothers who would have done so for less. But he needn't expend the effort. The serf would not live long. He did not learn the names of his human crew. To do so would be a waste. Their time on the Kaal was short-lived. It was a vessel unlike any other. Home to the bulk of the Flesh Terror's Death Company, it was tasked with but a single objective: to bring ruin to the enemies of the Emperor. The human mind was unable to cope with the miasma of anguish that saturated the ship. Most killed themselves within 2 Terran years. Apollos stared down from the gantry. Below, 20 ashen-armored Death Company stood in ranks of 5. Each awaited the command to board the drop pods that stood on deck like giant black teardrops, ready to bring sorrow to the Stromachians. Serfs drifted between the rows of Death Company, anointing their armor with lubricating oils and unguents of warding. Apollos regarded the nearest serf as its body quivered during its task. A neuro cable threaded through the serf's crimson robe, connecting its brain to its spinal column. The serfs were all lobotomized, little more than drones. Apollos felt his grip tighten on the gantry's support rail. His warriors deserved better. But no sane man could be coerced to stand so close to the murderous Space Marines. The Death Company were cursed, the walking dead. Their bodies intact, their minds consumed by the rage. Without the burden of conscience, all that remained for them was to ensure that they didn't enter death's embrace alone. Apollos was honored to lead them in their final charge. In the eaves of the chamber, the chapter's cherubs began intoning the prayers from the Irae's lexicon.
Our wrath shall be unceasing.
Apollos echoed the choir, reciting pertinent lines. Uncoiling his rosary, the chaplain began the Mori Patris, the Mass of Doom. The service was traditionally held on the eve of battle to draw out those among the Flesh Terrors whose rage threatened to take them and fold them into the ranks of the Death Company. Apollos had never needed the Mori Patris to identify his flock. Even before his induction into the chaplaincy, he had always been able to look into the eyes of his brothers and measure their spirit.
Flesh is ephemeral, wrath eternal.
Apollos used the Mori Patris in his own way, combining it with the teachings of the Irae's lexicon to churn his warriors into a fervent rage. They would fight possessed of an unshakable purpose, ignorant of even the most grievous wounds. They would set about the foe with the strength and vigor of a Cretacean jungle terror. They would slaughter unto death. Searing spears of light flickered out across the void to stab at the Death Kaal's prow as it powered towards the Stromachian fleet. The vessel's shields rippled and flared, failing under the vicious onslaught.
Status!
Shields collapsed, liege. Cycling again now.
At range, the Stromachians had the advantage. Their warships were studded with huge turrets, each housing quad banks of energy projectors that spat concentrated beams of destruction. Such lance weaponry enabled them to easily outdistance the Kaal's weapon batteries.
Helmsman, more speed!
Zophias punched his fist as the Kaal shook under another lance strike. He leant forward in his throne.
Get us closer!
Yes, Leash. All ahead, full!
Zophias took a breath and sat back.
Follow this attack line. Take us through them.
Zophias indicated a course that would bring the Khal through the middle of the Stromachian vessels. It was a bold, aggressive move, one that would expose the Khal to a withering hail of broadsides. But it would allow Zophias to close the distance quickly and prevent the Stromachians from maneuvering away. A slew of warnings scrolled across his retinal display. Trajectory assessments, collision predictions, and damage projections cautioned him against his course of action. He blinked them away with a snarl. He would trust to the discipline of his crew, to the Khal's speed, and the meter's thick layer of armorplast and ceramite plating that wrapped its hull to bring them victory. Zophias growled as another barrage of lance strikes struck the Khal, burning through the outer layer of ablative plating to scar the strike cruiser's flanks. He stared out through the real space window, his eyes fixed on the distant outlines of the three Stromachian vessels. More than 10,000 souls cowered inside each of their hulls. He would kill them all.
By the blood!
Balthiel snarled as the drop pod bucked in its cradle. He felt helpless as the Stromachian guns continued to hammer the Khal without answer. Mag harnessed inside the assault craft, the librarian was indebted to the capriciousness of fate. He hoped Zophias knew what he was doing. Even from the bowels of the ship, Balthiel could feel the chaplain's anger, his desire to rend, to kill. It boiled through the ship like an inferno, smoldering at the edge of Balthiel's thoughts. The Death Company could sense it too. Balthiel fought down the urge to draw his force sword as he thought of the five death-armored killers who shared the drop pod. He had never been so close to a squad of the cursed. Under normal circumstances, only a chaplain was considered to have the strength of mind and purity of spirit to accompany the Death Company into battle. A tangible air of mortality followed them. It drove even the soundest of warriors mad and dragged them into the rage's embrace. Balthiel took a breath and relaxed his muscles. He was no chaplain, but he had little choice. Without the aid of his gifts, the Death Company would never make it through the air defense batteries guarding the skies above the governor's palace. Deploying further out would allow the defenders valuable time to bolster their lines. Apollos had been clear. Stromach Prime had to die in a day. Craning his neck, Balthiel regarded the Death Company to his left and right. Their crimson optics glowered in the low light, and together with the incessant snarls that rumbled in their throats, reminded Balthiel of the Night Terrors. Figures of Cretacean folklore, the Terrors were said to stalk the darkness. They awaited the unwary, boiling away the soul of a man with a single glance before fading into the shadows. Balthiel's unease grew as he thought again of the black armored demon that haunted his dreams. Balthiel felt the Death Company grow angrier in response to each jarring strike against the Khal. He sensed their desire to be free of the drop pod, to be vambraced deep in their enemy's entrails. They were the most terrifying warriors Balthiel could conceive. He had seen the sons of Angron humbled by their battle fervor, and borne witness to the terrible violence the enraged flesh tearers were capable of. But he did not fear them. He feared no one. Balthiel's disquiet was rooted in the weakness of his own flesh. His burden was great. As a son of Sanguinius, he feared the flaw, the bloodlust and the madness, the promise of succumbing to the rage and joining his brothers in the black armor of death. As a librarian, he feared the moment of laxity that would see his soul devoured by the things that hungered in the warp.
Throne!
Balthiel growled in frustration. He was twice cursed, destined to succumb to the monster within or the demon without. He focused on the Death Company, on their anger. He listened to their hearts beating, pounding in their chests, racing to thrust blood around their murderous veins. Balthiel felt his own pulse quicken in response. He craved the charnel drumming of his twin hearts, the visceral immediacy of combat that filled him with a clarity of purpose and armored him against doubt. He would kill until killed. Duty demanded it, but his soul willed it. Zophias ignored the red warning sigils that flared across his console. If the Khal was functioning well enough to complain, then they were far from dead.
Power the bombardment cannon. Target the carrier.
The Khal's single, prow-mounted bombardment cannon was a mammoth weapon, accounting for almost 30% of the strike cruiser's mass. The heaviest armament carried by any space marine ship, it was designed to pulverize cities from high orbit, but worked just as well against enemy vessels.
Yes, Leash.
The gunnery serf made the necessary adjustments to the targeting cogitators, gradually feeding power to the bombardment cannon's firing cells. In the depths of the Khal, 1,000 indentured workers pulled on the meters of thick chain that lifted the magma shells from their housings and loaded them into the weapon's breech, an onerous task that took them less than a minute under the stern direction of the gangmaster's neural whip.
Weapon ready! Target acquired!
A reverberating thrum shook the Khal from prow to stern as its primary weapon cycled to full charge.
Fire!
The Khal shuddered as the bombardment cannon unleashed its wrath, sending a salvo of magma warheads burning towards the Emperor's Guardian. The Dictator-class's shields flared like a newborn star, overloading as the first of the warheads struck home. The remainder rolled over the carrier in a tide of destruction, stripping the hull and destroying the superstructure. Secondary explosions erupted along the Guardian's length, blanketing its outline in flame.
Target hit, Lee. Shields down, engines disabled, vessel crippled.
Zophias kept his eyes fixed on the tactical hololith as the Surveyor Serf relayed the damage assessment. The Dictator class was defenseless. Its engines were leaking plasma, a blue mist that bled away into the void. What little of the carrier's crew survived the conflagration would soon die from exposure. The Khal's master snarled.
Fire again!
The Emperor's Guardian was a drifting hulk. It posed no further threat to the Khal. The mission dictated they expend their efforts elsewhere. The gunnery serf turned to Zophias, his objection dying in his throat. The chaplain's scarred flesh was pulled drum tight over his face, as though his bones fought to break free of it. The bionic ocular that sat in place of his right eye shone crimson, while his skin was cast into blue relief by the hololith. The serf swallowed hard.
Leash, yes, Leash!
The deck shook under Zophias as the pride of Halka raked the Khal with its lances. Zophias growled. They should not have been able to fire again so soon. He consulted the data streaming across the tactical hololith. The Stromachian vessel had diverted energy from their engines, decreasing the recharge time of their weapons. They sought to punish the Khal for the damage wrought on the Emperor's Guardian. Zophias grinned. Such careless indulgence of anger would cost them.
Ready to fire, Leash?
Finish them.
Without the protection of its shields, the Emperor's Guardian was defenseless against the wrath of the bombardment cannon. The magma shell slammed into its hull with fierce intent, pulverizing its armored skin. Secondary explosions erupted from within the vessel as fire consumed everything. It broke apart from port to starboard, shattered by the merciless barrage. The two pieces of the carrier tumbled away from one another, falling towards Stromark Prime like flaming heralds of the fate that awaited the world. A wing of hastily launched bombers raced away from the dying carrier, their ident runes flashing on Zophias' tactical display as they burned at full thrust. Zophias grinned. It was a noble effort, but their flight was in vain. He watched with grim satisfaction as one by one they blinked dark. Bubbling explosions and secondary detonations had continued to rack the aft section of the Guardian until the ship's warp drive ruptured. The bomber wing was annihilated by a halo of expanding plasma as the Guardian's death throes overtook it. The Khal shuddered as a hail of lasfire and solid-state projectiles hammered its starboard side, forcing Zophias to brace himself against his throat. Below him, a handful of serfs jerked back from their stations, killed by an electrical discharge. The shock had blackened their skin and left flames licking their robes. Five more willing servants stepped from the wings of the bridge to take over from their fallen comrades.
Liege, we are in weapon battery range.
Zophias was pleased by the replacement gunnery serf's dedication to duty. He seemed unperturbed by the blood that smeared his console, or the smell of charred flesh.
So it would seem.
Broadside for broadside, the Kull was outgunned. The Halka's hull was pockmarked by gun ports and weapon housings, each ready to unleash a hail of tank-sized shells upon the flesh-tearer's vessel.
Helmsman, new heading!
The Halka's directional thrusters faltered, emitting a guttering roar as they tried to react to the Kull's sudden course shift. With her engines running below optimal, the Stromarchian vessel was left to flail in the void like a beached sea mammal as the Kull maneuvered. The strike cruiser turned, presenting only its armored prow to the Halka's guns. Zophias felt his muscles bunch in anticipation as the Halka grew to fill the real space window. At such close range, he could make out every detail of the ship's gilded hull. Its armored skin had been finely wrought into towering basilicas, pious bulwarks against the dangers of the void. Zophias scowled. He had no intention of trading blows with the Stromarchian vessel. He was going to ram it.
Brace! All hands brace!
The surveyor serf's voice crackled through every vox on the Kull, warning of the imminent collision with the Halka. The Halka's shields hissed and cracked, overloading as the Kull pushed into their embrace. The Stromarchian guns fell silent, its crew dumbstruck by the insane maneuver and unable to adjust their aim in time.
Bring them death!
Zophias drove the Kull into the Halka, using the serrated armor of his vessel like a gargantuan chain blade to mutilate the Stromarchian ship. The flesh-tearer's ship continued forwards, ripping along the Halka's flank until it was wedged in place, tangled in the mess of destruction. Breaches opened up across the Halka, its hapless gunnery crew sucked into the void like withered chaff. Fire washed through the ship, scrubbing entire decks and mushrooming out through lesions in the hull to illuminate the destruction.
Now! Fire!
Zophias slammed his fist against his console. With its weapons batteries pressed against the Halka's ruined hull, every shot found its mark. A torrent of missiles, las bolts, and plasma rounds savaged the Stromarchian vessel, stripping its armor-plast bonding and broiling its innards. The Halka's hull fractured, breaking off in chunks under the unremitting onslaught. Internal detonations racked the vessel from prow to stern, signaling its end. The weight of firepower ripped the Kull free from the Halka.
Helmsman! Full reverse! Shields!
The Kull's weapons fell silent, its shield flickering into life a microsecond before the Halka's engines imploded. The pride of Halka detonated in a blue flash. Adamantium blast shutters locked down over the Kull's wheel space window, protecting the bridge crew from the piercing brightness. The shock wave crashed through the shields and broke against its hull.
Report! Shield generators are disabled. Hull integrity failed on deck 7, 18, and 30.
My brothers!
Assault bay is secure.
Zophias looked out through the real space window as the shutters receded. Nothing but debris remained of the Stromarchian battleship.
Target the frigates! Kill everything!
Yurik walked as fast as he dared, weaving his way between the military and clerical staff that rushed past him in the opposite direction. It angered him that they paid the halls they moved through so little respect. The Primus was a palace like no other, a jewel of architecture and sculpture. It was founded by their forefathers and had been the seat of leadership on Stromarch Prime for 10,000 years. Though the governor's palace on Stromarch Secundus was considerably larger and better defended, it could not claim the same grandiosity as the Primus. Yurik slowed as he reached the Hall of Remembrance, his soiled boots sullying the marble floor.
Forgive me.
Yurik glanced up at the stone sculptures that lined the walls. He stopped at the end of the corridor, smoothed down his tunic, and ran a hand through his hair. Taking a breath, he pushed open the vaulted glass doors and stepped into the royal receiving chamber.
Governor...
Urich bent to one knee as he addressed the ruler of Stromark Prime. Governor Agrafena stood with her back to Urich, her attention fixed on the red-crested birds that fluttered between the trees outside in the palatial gardens. Clad in a black body glove, overlain with a mesh of refractive armor, she was not as Urich had come to expect. Her long locks had been tied back, hidden in a tight ponytail that draped her back like a scabbard. Instead of the golden scepter of her office, she held a slender sword and rested on its golden hilt.
At another time, I would have you flogged for this interruption.
Urich stayed silent, a bead of sweat forming on his brow.
What do you have to report?
Agrafena motioned for Urich to continue.
The fleet, Governor. Our fleet is gone.
And our divisions? What news of them?
Urich faltered before answering.
Gone too. They are all gone, my lady.
Agrafena turned, fixing Urich with a granite stare.
Gone? Explain yourself, footman.
Urich allowed himself a quick glimpse of his ruler's face. Her eyes were hard, as they always were. Her skin ice-smooth like the northern lakes. A mist of ruby and crimson colored her cheeks. And though they did little to warm her demeanor, Urich almost smiled. It lifted his spirits to see that she had not lost herself completely to the chaos ruling around her.
My lady, our armies have been scattered, destroyed. Every soldier beyond the shield, everyone outside the palace is... they're all dead.
Agrafena stared at him for a moment, her eyes unwavering as she received the news that her world had been reduced to a mortuary.
The Brigade, Halka?
Agrafena asked after her personal regiment, the 1,000 elite warriors who protected the Primus.
Captain Alexander and his men stand ready, Governor.
Then we shall win the day. We shall show the Secundians our true mettle. The Brigade Halka has never been bested. These walls never breached. Never. I will not yield to them, Urich. I will condemn all to ash before I make peace with those treacherous cowards.
You cannot mean...
I mean exactly that.
Behind Urich, the noble visage of Stavros Halka, her father, looked down upon her. The oil on canvas of Stromark Prime's most celebrated leader hung over the chamber's far wall, next to the family crest. Stavros had been a great tactician, a peerless swordsman, and beneficent ruler. Agrafena lingered on the painting, finding her own face in her ancestors. She would not disgrace his memory by failing, whatever the cost.
Forgive me, Governor, but it is Space Marines we face. The Emperor has sent his immortal champions to destroy us. We cannot best them.
Lies!
Agrafena lashed out with her arm, striking a crystal sculpture of Stromark Prime from its place on the mantel. The irony of which was not lost on Urich as the fragile globe shattered across the floor.
Everything can be killed.
Agrafena spread her arms, gesturing to the dozen members of her honor guard that stood watch around the chamber. They were gene-bulked warriors, armored in thick carapace and carrying heavy plasma rifles.
You need only find the right weapon.
Earthiel?
Apollos' voice burst through the Voxlink, shaking the librarian from his reverie.
I am not against dying today, brother. But it shall not be because you failed to do your duty.
Patience! I will not be able to hold the shield for long. We must wait as long as possible.
You sound like Sargo. The coward waits in orbit around Secundus while hundreds bleed to save him sullying his hands. He is a disgrace to our warrior bloodline.
You cannot force his hand, brother.
Have you ever known anything that I cannot force? Just don't wait too long, librarian.
Balthiel bit down a reply. He understood Apollos' agitation. It went against everything the chaplain stood for to trust his life to a psyker. Warning runes twinkled like bloodied stars from the drop pod ceiling as another barrage of anti-aircraft fire barked at its hull.
Brother Jafiel!
Balthiel looked up as he spoke. Back on board the Kahl, Jafiel was watching, monitoring Balthiel through the pict recorder mounted on the wall of the drop pod.
You are my keeper.
Balthiel stared down at the remote melter charge locked to his thigh.
Do not hesitate.
The light on the pict recorder blinked twice in acknowledgement. Balthiel closed his eyes.
Emira, defend my soul this day of battle. Let my weaknesses be overcome by your strength that I may serve the chapter.
The temperature inside the drop pod plummeted as Balthiel reached out with his powers. A layer of unnatural frost formed on the walls, crusting the Death Company's armor as Balthiel eased his consciousness from his body. The Shield of Sanguinius, as it was known amongst Balthiel's order, was a psychic barrier, a physical manifestation of a librarian's will. He knew of no one who had ever attempted to manifest the shield on the scale he prepared to. Drawing on such power was dangerous. His soul would blaze in the warp, a refulgent feast for the denizens of that demon realm. Should he succumb to their seditious whispering, should the foul powers take command of his flesh, Jafiel would end him. Free from his flesh, Balthiel's mind ghosted through the cold ceramite of his armor, pushing out beyond the drop pod to hang in the Stromachian air. Above him, a dozen dark stars were burning downward. He let his mind wander over them, the way Cretacean children ran their hands through acaulis bushes. Apollos and the rest of the Death Company's minds shone like hot embers, their thoughts fixed on the slaughter to come. Balthiel pulled back, turning his attentions to the ground below. The palatial void shield shivered violet blue as another piece of the Emperor's Guardian finished its fall from orbit and dissolved against it. The Stromachian defense guns flared from under the shield's protective mantle, spewing a torrent of explosive rounds towards the Flesh-Terror assault force. Balthiel turned his back on the weapons to look up at the drop pods. He held out his hands. Thread lines of golden energy grew from his fingertips, weaving into a shimmering blanket that expanded to fill the air beneath the Flesh-Terror assault vessels. The librarian focused on the barrier, strengthening it with his mind. It was as unbreakable as his spirit, an indomitable shield without flaw or weakness. It could not be breached by man or demon, unless he was weak, unless he was flawed.
We are Fury!
Apollos' voice snarled over the vox. Blood ran from Balthiel's nose and ears as the Stromachian guns hammered his psychic barrier.
We are Wrath!
The chaplain's voice barely registered as Balthiel fought to maintain the shield.
Sanguinius, my father! Sanguinius, my armor! Aid me now!
His body trembled. Balthiel forced the words through bloodied lips as the drop pods tore through the palace's defenses and struck the earth, disgorging the Death Company into the enemy.
We are Death!
The polished marble of the palace floor was slick with blood. The torn remains of Governor Agrafena's bodyguard lay strewn around the antechamber. The elite of the Stromachian army were now little more than fleshy gobbets, churned up by chain weapons and blasted apart by bolt rounds. Balthiel stood in the middle of the chamber, a halo of psychic energy glistening around his body as the quickening faded.
It is done.
Outside, Balthiel could hear the roar of chain weapons and the harsh crack of bolt pistols as the Death Company continued to vent their rage upon the corpses of the Stromachians.
Bring them to heel!
Apollos slammed a fresh clip into his bolt pistol.
Not yet. Stromach Secundus has yet to be cleansed.
That is not our fight.
There will be no fight.
Apollos gestured towards a heap of bodies at the far side of the room. One of them was moving. Agrafena's vision swam. She felt cold, weak. Shaking with effort, Agrafena pushed Yurik's corpse from on top of her. The footman had taken a round meant for her. Touching her hand to her abdomen, she felt the sticky wetness of blood. Yurik's sacrifice had been for naught. The explosive bolt had torn through his chest, showering Agrafena in lethal fragments. She was dying. The governor didn't spare the footman a second thought, her mind fixed on what she must do. She dragged herself up against the wall, wiping away blood from her lips. She would die on her feet, and she would not die alone. Balthiel snapped his bolt pistol up to fire.
Wait!
Apollos grabbed Balthiel's wrist, staying the librarian's hand. The governor had fought to the last. Even now, in the face of certain oblivion, she refused to accept what her body told her to be true. She would kill with her last action.
What are you doing?
Behind his skull mask, Apollos grinned darkly. The governor was one of his flock, whether she knew it or not.
Wait and watch.
Agrafena bit down and depressed the data chip secreted under her tongue.
Omega-1, Ellipse 9. This is Governor Agrafena. By my father, for our children, launch!
Brother?
Balthiel looked to Apollos.
Zargo has yet to set foot upon Secundus. They have deployed more guard regiments and requested a further force to hold orbit so that they may depart the system. This will force Zargo to act and expedite the resolution on Secundus.
Zophias' voice crackled over the vox, his communication distorted by the charged particles lingering in the world's atmosphere, an after-effect of the orbital bombardment the cowl had rained down upon it.
Brothers, surveyors detect a massive energy buildup on the near side moon.
You knew?
Apollos nodded.
I knew you were a bastard, Apollos.
From the blood are monsters born, brother.
On Stromark Prime's second moon, within one of the many mining complexes operated by the Halka Consortium, thousands of long-dormant apocalypse missiles rumbled to life. The missiles crested the surface, arcing round the moon's orbit to burn towards the manufacturing and population centers of Stromark Secundus. Above Agrafena, the marble visages of her ancestors stared down approvingly. A racking cough sent her into spasm. Blood filled her mouth and trickled from her ears. She let her head loll to the side and found her father above the mantel. The artist had done well to capture his rugged nobility. Agrafena gazed into her father's eyes and smiled. Her legacy would outlast his, her final thought, as the last of Halka blood bled from her veins.